Welcome. Thank you for watching this teaching video from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. Please check out our other videos and don't forget to like and subscribe. Our mission is to help people come to know Jesus better and love Him more every day. We believe this will not only help our own spiritual growth, but also help us better influence the community and the world for Christ. For more information about Oak Tree, please visit us at oaktreechurch.com. There you'll find past message series, online giving options, and more information about our discipleship process that we call The Path. Now, enjoy this message. We'd love to hear from you in the comments or the website contact form. Thank you.
We're in Galatians 2. Woo. Made it to Galatians 2. And so Paul is still working with his history. So if we scroll back just a little bit to verse 18, chapter 1, verse 18, then after 3 years I went to Jerusalem to visit Cephas, get information from him. I stayed with him 15 days. I saw none of the other apostles except James, the Lord's brother. And what I had said was that that information and what Luke wrote in Acts 9, similar, the details are a little bit different. You know, they're telling different aspects of the story, but the point is that this was not a major ministry trip. It wasn't something that Paul was visiting everybody and running around to the churches and meet with all the apostles and elders and all this stuff. It was supposed to be a pretty well down low. It was not intended to be a big thing. It probably, based on Luke's information, became a bigger thing than Paul had intended. And I think that's a little bit where the discrepancy in the accounts is. Paul's idea was, I'm going to go, I'm going to meet with a couple of people, I'm going to be done. Luke, as the historian, said, well, and he did this and this and this. Well, that's not why I was there. This is why I was there. Well, yeah, but you did this. And, okay, but that's not the point. This is why I was here. And I think that's where we get Acts and Galatians, the little bit of differences there. Right. He wanted a very detailed, very chronological, very, historic account of what was going on. Right, exactly. So he was throwing in some details there in Acts 9, which is fine. I mean, it's not a big deal. It's not one of those things. I don't know that I've even ever heard anybody call it contradictions. Right? There are places in the Bible where people say, that's a contradiction. Right? I don't even think I've heard that about that one. It's just, different details about the same event. Now we have a little bit of an issue, because in chapter 2, verse 1, it says, then after 14 years. So the question is it a cumulative 14 years, or is it 3 plus 14, which now makes 17 years? Okay, that's really the question. And I know what my answer is based on the timeline that we have available, and that is based on all the evidence. Jesus died, church started. Jesus, so death, resurrection, ascension, and then Pentecost, the beginning of the church, all within that 50-day period in AD 33. Jerusalem Council in Acts 15 is either 49 or 50. So you've only got about 16, 17 years total right there. We don't know exactly when Paul was saved. Was it the first year? I'm inclined to think not, because I don't think the persecution of the church started quite that soon. From Acts 2 to Acts 8, there seems to be a lot of, not a lot of time, but there seems to be some time there. Acts 7 is when Stephen was killed. Acts 8 is when there was the first major persecution, and a lot of people scattered outside of Jerusalem, still parked in Judea and Samaria, and then there was a little bit more persecution, then they went outside of Israel. And Saul was there for that. And then in chapter 9 is when he was saved. So I don't think he has 17 years, you know, the 3 plus the 14. I don't think there's 17 years there available, because when he says, so after 14 years, I went to Jerusalem again with Barnabas, taking Titus along too. Now, this would be great if we found Titus anywhere in the book of Acts. He's found other places. He's found in Paul's letters. There's a letter to him, but he's not mentioned anywhere in Acts. You don't find Titus in Acts. It would be so easy if we could just turn, hey, let me show you. Here's in Acts 13, which is, I think Acts 13 is this one. But it would be great if we found in Acts 13, Luke said, and Paul went with Titus. It's like, hey, look, it's perfect right there. But it's not there. Of all the people, Timothy's in there, Quill and Priscilla are in Acts, Silas is in Acts, Barnabas is in Acts, John Mark is in Acts, everybody's in Acts, except for Titus. Never mentioned, which is really interesting. So he took Titus along, Barnabas went with him, took Titus along. He went there because of a revelation. Now that one is interesting because, go back to... we'll just flip around on our pages here. Look at Acts chapter, I think let's go out. Oh no, Acts 11, sorry. I misspoke. Acts 11. Down in verse 27. Acts 11, 27. At that time, some prophets came down from Jerusalem to Antioch, which is funny because I always have to bring this out. Jerusalem is much further south than Antioch. Antioch is up in Syria. Jerusalem is down in Israel. But because Jerusalem's up on the hill, you always go up to Jerusalem and down from Jerusalem. And so they came down from Jerusalem, down the hill, blum, 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 but went way north up to Antioch. One of them, named Agabus, got up and predicted by the Spirit that a severe famine was about to come over the whole inhabited world. And this took place during the reign of Claudius. So when Paul here says in Galatians, I went there because of a revelation, it could be that this prophecy is what then spurred Paul and Barnabas on, because he says, so the disciples, each in accordance with his financial ability, decided to send relief to the brothers living in Judea. And they did so, sending their financial aid to the elders by Barnabas and Saul. And he is going to, in Galatians 2:10, he's going to bring up the fact that the people in Jerusalem asked them to requested only that we remember the poor, something that he was eager to do. So in Acts 11, we have a prophecy which sent Saul and Barnabas to Jerusalem with financial relief for the poor there. In Acts 2, we have him going with Titus and Barnabas and this concept of the poor showing up. So it seems to me, I misspoke, not 13, it seems to me that this Acts 11 is possibly the same one. We still have a little bit of a problem because that with 14 years, I'm taking the 14 years as cumulative. So maybe 15 years total from Pentecost. Maybe if we allow for a year for some events to happen in Acts, including Saul's conversion, then 14 years, you know, after that. I'm taking it there because Acts 11 still has a couple of years before the Jerusalem Council in Acts 15. And so what happens is it sort of looks like that. And you can't even see that. That's just great. Let's see. Hold on. I think I can make it bigger. Does that help? No, I got it. Okay. I thought by making it bigger, it would help. Yeah, for the recording. That's fine. But I make it bigger in here. So what we have is, you don't have my mouse. And I don't have my... There's my mouse pointer. So we have about 33. See, this one has Paul converting to Christianity around 33. That would give about 6 months, because Pentecost is in May, June on our calendar. So using the 33 number, that would give him about 6 months for all of chapters 2 through 9 to happen. It's possible, seems tight. But, you know, that's my speculation, my opinion. So then Paul visits. So what we have, I should say, these on this timeline, these dots that have the sort of the fuzzy background are what they call early dating. So 33, 34, Paul visits Jerusalem after his conversion is an early date. 35, he visits Jerusalem for the first time. That would probably be, it's going to be somewhere in there within a year or two after his salvation. So it really depends, this whole timeline really depends on where we place his salvation. Notice, if my mouse will, where did you go now? Oh yeah, I see it. It doesn't like me. Hey, there you are. Stop. All right, obviously this is not a good plan. Up, I can point. See the green dot? Up at AD 50 there. Circa AD 49 is Paul at the Council of Jerusalem. So they do have the Council of Jerusalem at the right date historically, 49-50. So it's really the stuff that comes before that. He has gone on his first missionary tour in chapters 13 and 14 of Acts, and that's when he comes back, and then we have the Jerusalem Council, and it was after the Jerusalem Council that Paul and Barnabas had a falling out over whether they're going to take John Mark with them. So that's his second tour. So where it says his second missionary journey, 49 to 51, is that 49 to 51, is that 50 to 52, depends on where the Council of Jerusalem is. But all of that stuff is pretty well in the right time. So they have even mid-40s. We've got Paul visits the Galatians. Now they call that an early date. I'm not sure how else we could, you know, where else we could do that other than I think that there's his first visit to the Galatians, not his first missionary journey, his first missionary tour. I think this Paul visits the Galatians really overlaps with this dark maroon one, 35 to 45, Paul lives in Cilicia and Syria for that extended time. I really think he started planting some churches during that time. And so before he goes out officially in Acts 13 and 14 as his first missionary tour with Barnabas and everything, I think he's already done some of that groundwork over there. And so if Galatians was written, say, around 48, which is what I think, then there's our 14 years. We don't really have a lot of room in there. I know it's really tight, and so the only way to make more room is to extend dates. Well, 33 is, I mean, there are some people who disagree with that, but 33 is pretty well fixed. 49-50 is pretty well fixed. So there's only so much room that we can give. It also could be talking round numbers. I mean, it's not 14 on the nose. Is it 13 and a half? Is it 14 in a month? It, you know, there's some wiggle room in there. I mean, his goal here isn't to say, you know, exactly on this date, right? It's, you know, so after 14 years, you know, after 3 years, I did this, but after 14 years, this is what I did. So I look at it cumulatively. Okay. Not everybody does, and that's okay. The point of his doing this, though, was The point of his doing this was to take Titus along. He did because of the revelation and presented to them the gospel that I preach among the Gentiles. This is the ministry that I'm doing. Now it's interesting. He's not asking for permission. He's not asking, "Hey, how can you support me?" He's just giving them the information, and he's not making a big deal about it. He said, "I did so only in a private meeting with the influential people." He says, "to make sure that I was not running or had not run in vain." Now, what do you think? How would you take that? I did so in a private meeting with the influential. This is sort of the NET translates this sort of nicely, the influential people. Paul actually wrote those who seem to be something. a little bit further down. Maybe that's verse 6. Those who seem to be something. What does NLT say there? Is it 2 or 6? Okay, consider themselves to be leaders, right? What does 6 say? Okay. Yeah, so the NET translates both of those with just influential, but there is a little bit of difference there, and it is into those who seem to be something. So how would you take this with to make sure that I was not running or had not run in vain? That's the issue, right?
Yeah.
It sounds like, in our minds, if we're just reading it, it sounds like he was double-checking his message. But he spent the entire first chapter saying, "I didn't get this from men, I didn't get this, I got it from..." So that can't be it.
They were still doing it, you know, checking on them.
I think that's what it was. I think that's exactly what it is.
Especially because it rephrases it as "I had not run." Like, what I did before wasn't wasted.
Yep. Yep. I think that's really what it is he was wondering if he was wasting his time preaching the message that he was preaching, because if Jerusalem wasn't behind it, then it would gain no traction among the Jews, and basically he had no reason to come back to Jerusalem anymore. If you guys are on the wrong track, if you guys are on the wrong track, then I don't need to come back here. But if you're on the right track, which is the one I'm on, then we can work together. I really think that's what it is. He was convinced that he was on the right track. He wasn't sure exactly where Jerusalem stood on these things. And the question was, do Gentiles have to be circumcised in order to be saved? That's why he took Titus along. Titus was going to be his test case. And not even Titus, who was with me, was compelled to be circumcised, although he was a Greek. And that was what cleared it up for Paul. He knew that they were on the same team. He knew that they were preaching the same message, because if the apostles were not going to force Titus to be circumcised, then and the elders of the Jerusalem church, then he knew that they were okay. But if they were going to force Titus, then he would have packed his bags, he would have left, and probably not shown up in Jerusalem again. Chapter 15 in Acts, the Jerusalem Council never would have happened. Or if it did happen, it probably would not have turned out the same way. Yep. I really think that that was his thing. All right, that said, I'm sure I have a couple of slides here. 14 years seems like cumulative from Paul's conversion. We have some issues. Titus, never mentioned in Acts. It's the first chronological mention. He ended up being Paul's representative in Crete. He left the letter entitled Titus, the letter to Titus. Paul specifically says, I left you there in Crete to finish the work that we started, to appoint elders in the churches and do all this because he didn't have enough time. Now, what's interesting is, again, we don't know when that happened. Because Titus is never mentioned in Acts, but this is way early on. He should have been. I mean, what we see in Galatians, there's no reason. It's really weird that Titus is not mentioned if he was already with Paul before Timothy. Because Timothy doesn't show up until Acts 16. And this meeting took place in Acts 11. So Titus is one of the earliest guys with Saul and Barnabas already. Probably, maybe he came from the little island of Crete over to Antioch, or maybe he had gone up into the mainland of Asia Minor there when Saul was doing his early ministry. Right? We don't know anything. Where did he meet? Where did they meet? How did Titus get attached to Paul? You know, we don't know any of this information, but by the time we get to Acts 11, he is already with Paul and Barnabas headed to Jerusalem. But Paul never reaches Crete in Acts either. So when did that happen? Most people assume it's after Acts 28, after his first Roman imprisonment. But if Titus has been with him this whole time, it could have been a side trip, right? Especially since he hadn't appointed any elders yet. He preached the gospel. It could have been right smack in the middle of Acts and we wouldn't know. It's just really weird because Luke is so detailed. It's really strange that we have this whole aspect of Paul's ministry just completely missing. The only reason we know anything about Titus in his ministry is because Paul references him in his letters. That's it. It's really interesting, really fun. Then we... You weren't? Are you now? Well, you should be. Barnabas, on the other hand, shows up as early as Acts 4. In Acts chapter 4, Paul and John are arrested for preaching the gospel in Jerusalem. They're told, don't do this ever again. They say, we'll let you know, and go out and immediately start preaching again. And the church gathers together at the end of Acts 4. The church gathers together and prays for boldness so that they could keep preaching. And in order to help fund this ministry, certain people started donating large chunks of money, usually based off of something that they sold. You sell some land, sell something, and they give it over to this fledgling church there in Acts 4. Guy by the name Joseph. Acts chapter 4, verse 36. So Joseph, a Levite who was a native of Cyprus, called by the apostles Barnabas. Barnabas was his nickname, not his real name. His real name was Joseph. Well, how many Josephs you got running around Jerusalem, right? You know, he's not a famous guy in the Old Testament or anything that you'd name all your kids after, right? So it's Aramaic, and the way we know it's Aramaic is because of the prefix bar. Son of, right? If it were Hebrew, it would be Ben, because Ben is son. In Aramaic, Bar is son. Bar Mitzvah. Son of the, anybody know? Son of the commandment? son of the commandment. Son of the covenant. That doesn't sound right, though, because Brit is... No, not Brit. Yeah, son of the covenant. There we go. Okay. I think. Either way, that's Aramaic. Bar, son of, bat mitzvah would be daughter of, right? So Barnabas is the son of encouragement. They called him that as a nickname because he was such an encouraging guy. He was such a blessing to them. He was a Levite, so it's very possible that he could have been serving in the temple, not necessarily a priest, but the Levites, the tribe of Levi served in the temple. Only the family of Aaron, there were three families with three clans within the Levite tribe, the Levitic tribe, there were three clans. Only one of those clans could be priests. The other two clans could be other servants, but there were still from the tribe of Levi to help with the temple. It's very possible that he grew up, if he's a son of a Levite, his dad may have served in the temple during the time of Jesus. I mean, let's not forget how close these guys are. If he is grown old enough to have a field that belonged to him and be able to sell it, he would have been maybe possibly serving in the temple during the time of Jesus, just a couple years earlier, a year earlier, right, when Jesus was there. So he sold a field that belonged to him, brought the money, and placed it at the apostles' feet, one of the early guys to do this, to help fund this new ministry. And that's the end of Acts chapter 4, beginning of chapter 5 is when we run into Ananias and Sapphira, who also thought it would be a great idea to sell something and bring the money and just inflate the numbers a little bit. Did you really sell this for $100,000? Give or take.
Didn't they deflate the numbers?
Well, inflated their tax deduction letter. Is what it was. Didn't you really give us only $75,000? Depends on who you ask. We thought it was worth $100,000, right? Right. And of course, they didn't live to tell the story. But Barnabas shows up then as early as Acts 4. He stood beside Saul in Jerusalem in Acts 9. The very first time that Saul went to Jerusalem, Barnabas was there to vouch for him after Paul was saved. We saw that in chapter 1. He brought Saul into the ministry in Antioch after Saul spent about 10 years doing his own ministry. It was Barnabas who said, I need some help here in Antioch. I need a good teacher. I need some... And he went and hunted down Saul specifically to grab him and bring him back to Antioch to help him with the ministry there. And then in chapters 13 and 14, he served along with Paul on the first missionary tour. So he's really been invested in this from the very beginning, Barnabas has, and been invested in Paul, from the very beginning. He really, if there was a guy that, at least from our perspective, we could call Paul's mentor, at least early on, Barnabas. I mean, think about it. He's the son of encouragement. Here we have this guy who used to kill people, and now he's saved, and nobody wants to do business with him for good reason. You know, I mean, they don't trust him. So who comes alongside of him? The son of encouragement. From the very beginning. I think that's such a, when you see that just all together, I think that's just a really cool thing. And so when we talk about like the gift of encouragement, people have the spiritual gift of encouragement, you never know what you can do in somebody's life. And you just think of what Paul did in Saul's life and what we have because one guy took an interest in somebody that nobody else would. I just think that's really cool. You know? So that's Titus, that's Barnabas. Now, verses 3-5, this is not even Titus, right? Who was with me, was compelled to be circumcised, although he was a Greek, Gentile, maybe Greek, depending on where he's from. Now, this falls under the, so I said test case. Even after 14 or 15 years, the Jewish legalists still had considerable influence in Jerusalem. If this is 14 to 15 years after AD 33, after Pentecost, after the church is started, after the apostles are all there, after everything has happened, and they're still arguing about whether Gentiles have to be circumcised. That's pretty major. I mean, they have some influence still in Jerusalem. The fact that when we come to Acts 15 and we read the arguments that they were making, there's still a lot of influence there. There's priests, there's Pharisees that are in the church. They're saved, but they can't let go of some of these other things. And they're trying to force this on Gentiles. And the apostles are on one side, and the elders, and these guys, and everybody's got their sides. And Paul comes into the middle of this with Titus. Hey, what are we going to do about my buddy here? So I think he's really stirring up trouble. Is what he's doing. He's poking the bear, is what he's doing. And this is my bullet point there. Tell us what you really think, Paul. Look at verse 4. Now this matter arose because of the false brothers with false pretenses who slipped in unnoticed to spy on our freedom that we have in Christ Jesus, to make us slaves. Really, could you be a little bit more, you know, explicit about what you think about this whole issue? Now, this concept of freedom and slavery is going to show up several times in Galatians. He's going to make this the illustration, the big deal. You can be a slave to the Mosaic law, or you can have freedom in Christ, but you can't have both. What are you going to do? And those two words or those two concepts are going to keep coming up over and over and over. But look at this. False brothers, false pretenses slipped in unnoticed to spy on us and just, you know, to make us slaves. And, verse 5, but we did not surrender. Even for a moment. In my notes, let me look at verse 5. To whom not even for an hour is literally what it says to them not even for an hour. It's like we did not give them the time of day. We're not interested in, we didn't surrender even for a moment in order that the truth of the gospel would remain with you, Galatians, Gentiles, way out there, so far removed from what's going on in Jerusalem, and yet under attack from the same things that Jerusalem was being attacked on, being attacked by. Isn't that amazing? Six through ten. Yeah, okay. All right. 1 through 5, what do you think so far? Thoughts, questions, comments? What's that?
Paul is real.
Yep. Yep. And he's passionate, right? He's passionate about, there's something in here that strikes a chord with him, or strikes a nerve, maybe even, that he is not willing to let go. Yeah. Yep. And I think that is summarized in verse 5 there, in order that the truth of the gospel. I think that's really what it came down to. By the way, that phrase is going to show up again a little bit further down. He keeps coming back to this. Yeah. All right, so he's in Jerusalem in Acts 11, we think, okay? But from those who were influential, or in literally those who seemed to be something, you said he's real. I mean, this is about as candid as you can get here, right? But from those from those, notice, from those who were influential, whatever they were makes no difference to me. God shows no favoritism. I don't care who they were. Those influential leaders added nothing to my message. So it wasn't about what can he get from them. It's other than just what he can find out, right? What are you doing? On the contrary, when they saw that I was entrusted with the gospel to the uncircumcised, just as Peter was entrusted with the gospel to the circumcised. Now, I love this parenthesis here in verse 8. For he who empowered Peter for his apostleship to the circumcised also empowered me for my apostleship to the Gentiles. Just in case you forgot what I said in the last chapter on page 1, I'm going to remind you, I've got the same anointing or whatever you want to call it. You know, nobody questions that Peter is an apostle. Everybody questions that Paul's an apostle. He said, I got it from the same source. I got it from the same guy. Different time, different situation, but you don't question him. Why are you questioning me? So he's still defending his authority a little bit. So when they saw, skipping from 7 to 9, when they saw that he was entrusted, and verse 9, when James... Cephas, I don't understand. Here's a question. I've never really researched it. I don't know why he goes back and forth between Peter and Cephas. Kephas in Aramaic. I don't know why. He won't. Could be. Except neither one of those was his real name. I mean, yeah, Simeon, literally, Simeon would have been his name. Simeon was his name. Kephas is Aramaic, and it means rock. So somebody gave him the nickname already, unless that was what Jesus did in Matthew 16. I call you Peter and upon this rock, but did he call him Kephas there? You know, so it's really weird. Why would he go back, especially these two? He doesn't go back and forth between Simon and Peter. He goes back and forth between the Greek and the Aramaic version of the same name. It's really weird. I've never really understood why. I've never read anybody who explained it. Maybe I have and I just missed it, but it's really interesting. So he just talked about Peter in verse 7, Peter in verse 8, Cephas in verse 9. Same guy. James, Cephas, Kephas, and John. Now, what's interesting here is that if this is Acts 11, and I keep saying if, I think it is. I think it makes sense that it's Acts 11. You know, it all lines up. If it's Acts 11, then we don't know which James this is if he doesn't clarify. Because there are two James, well, there's at least three James. Two of them are apostles, John's brother and James the Less, okay, son of Alphaeus. Plus, we have Jesus' brother, whom he did reference already earlier on, okay? James the Lord's brother, he's not an apostle, he's the leader of the elders. He's sort of like the lead pastor, the chief elder. So we've got the apostles and the elders. James, the brother of John, was killed by Herod, at least in Acts, in chapter 12. So if this is happening in 11, depending on where, how things overflow, obviously, you know, Luke is writing it out, you know. So has James already been martyred, assassinated, you know, whatever, not assassinated, because Herod took him out, imprisoned him, executed him, saw that the people thought that was a great idea. His poll ratings went up, so now he arrested Peter as well, and he was going to do the same thing with Peter had Peter not miraculously been released. Yeah, yeah, the angel sneaks in and kicks him in the side. Hey, get up. He's like, what? Get up. See, but that's in Acts chapter 12. So depending on where that overlap is, this James could be John's brother, could be Jesus' brother. The likelihood is that it's Jesus' brother because he's already been mentioned once before. And so by just saying James, it seems like he would be the same guy that I've already talked to. But that was a different trip, right? And Peter, James, and John are the big three in the apostles, right? So you got a couple of different ways that you could go with this. I don't think it really matters other than the fact that we're just trying to do good study and we need to, you know, weigh all the options. James, Cephas, and John, who had a reputation as pillars, and goes along with the, you know, they seem to be somebody.
Well, they had a reputation as pillars, not, you know, people who thought they were.
Yeah, yeah. It's, they were, yeah. But this idea, influential pillars, I don't think this is an attack on the apostles. I don't think this is Paul downplaying them as much as it is saying they're not more important than he is. I love, I'll put it up here. You can look at it in your own copy too, but in 2 Corinthians 12, he says something that's really, really interesting. And this is a good translation. 2 Corinthians 12, starting in verse 11, I've become a fool. You yourselves have forced me to do it, for I should have been commended by you. He's telling the Corinthians, I should have been commended by you, for I lack nothing in comparison to those super apostles. And the net puts those in quotation marks. Even though I am nothing. What does the NLT say? Super apostles in quotation marks. And that's a great translation. It really is, actually. Let me look here. Hyperleon, the hyper, the above, super is how we would say it in English. That's that really the best translation. These super apostles, these prominent apostles. He said, it's not me. I mean, I'm nothing. But indeed, the signs of an apostle were performed among you with great perseverance by signs and wonders and powerful deeds. Interesting, and this goes off into a whole another thing, but signs and miracles and wonders were the signs of an apostle, not the signs of every Christian, not the signs of anybody who believed in Jesus. They were the signs of an apostle. Hebrews 2 tells us the same thing, that God confirmed the apostles' message, the first-hand witnesses, by signs and miracles and wonders to those of us who heard them. The writer to the Hebrews counts himself a second-generation person, second-generation Christian, so not Paul, who didn't do signs and miracles and wonders. Also not Paul. I think it's pretty good evidence, one of several good evidences that Hebrews was not written by Paul. Doesn't claim any of the stuff that Paul claimed. Here he says, you had all the signs of the apostle when I was there with you. And I'm not anything less than these super apostles. So back in Galatians 2, he's talking about these influential people, these pillars. It's not so much about, you know, trying to knock them down. Oh, they think they're so big. It's that everybody else thinks they're so big and thinks little of him. And it's not because he's anything and he demands to have respect because he's an apostle, but it affects his credibility. It affects his message if nobody's willing to listen to him. Yeah, well, you just think you're an apostle. You know, when was the last time Jesus stopped you and said, hey, I'm going to make you an apostle? You know, when he does that to you, then you can question mine. Right? So they recognized the grace that had been given to me. When they saw that I was entrusted, when they recognized the grace that had been given to me, they gave Barnabas and me the right hand of fellowship, agreeing that we would go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised. They requested only that we remember the poor, the very thing I also was eager to do, which makes sense in the context if they had just brought financial aid to the saints in Jerusalem. Don't forget us. When you go off and you're doing your thing among the Gentiles and you're in all the foreign lands and you're international traveler and all this stuff, don't forget us poor the saints at home. Basically is what they said. And he said, the very thing I also was eager to do. Now watch this. remember the poor. This was a common theme in Paul's letters, and it was an ongoing project of Paul. We see in Romans, 1 Corinthians, and 2 Corinthians, the major passages that people tend to use about tithing in church. Okay, the tithe is an Old Testament thing. There's nothing in the New Testament about tithing. We give generously, we give for certain reasons. But the passages people tend to talk about, oh, you got to give your tithe to church, you got to give at church, are these very passages where Paul is taking a collection to take back to Jerusalem for the poor. It's not even staying in the local church that he's talking about. It's not his missionary support. In fact, in Corinthians, he wouldn't take missionary support from them. They didn't offer, but he said, you should have. You owe it to me. I deserve for you to pay me. But basically, if you would, I wouldn't take it because you don't listen to me anyway, so I'm not going to let you buy me off. In so many, that's my paraphrase, in so many words. But the passage, just look at 1 Corinthians 16. This is a very common one. 1 Corinthians 16. But we can't read verse 1. We have to go to verse 2 because verse 1, you know, kills our whole theory about that this is about tithing in church. Verse 2, on the first day of the week, each of you should set aside some income and save it to the extent that God has blessed you so that a collection will not have to be made when I come. How many times have we heard that about giving or tithing or supporting missionaries or whatever? Well, but look at verse 1. With regard to the collection for the saints, oops, that's not me, that's not your church, please follow the directions that I gave. Oh, look at that, to the churches of Galatia. He's been doing this for a long time. And here's his instructions. Don't wait until I get there and then take a special offering. Because if you wait until I get there, which is going to be months and months and months from now or whenever I show up, and you take a special offering, you're not going to have it. Because winter is coming and, you know, all of the, life happens. And so this is not, we're going to take a special offering for the saints in Jerusalem when Paul gets there. It's, I want you to set a little bit aside every week. And when you set a little bit aside every week, then when I get there, we'll actually have something to talk about. That was his solution to supporting the saints in Jerusalem. Second Corinthians, well, let's see. Let's go to Romans. Romans 15, verses 25 through 27. This is really clear. Now I go to Jerusalem to minister to the saints. Macedonia and Achaia are pleased to make some contribution for the poor among the saints in Jerusalem, for they were pleased to do this, and indeed they are indebted to the Jerusalem saints. If the Gentiles have shared in their spiritual blessings, they're obligated to minister to them in material blessings. Now, there are some ministries, usually Jewish ministries, chosen people ministries, Jews for Jesus, Friends of Israel. They love this because they are going to argue the same thing. Salvation, according to Jesus, John chapter 4, salvation comes from the Jews. Romans chapter 1, we preach the gospel to the Jews first and also to the Gentiles. Jews take priority. Even in the church age, the Jews take priority from a gospel mission thing. And Paul said, listen, if you're a Gentile and you're saved, you owe the Jews. That's what he said. So they like that verse. The Jewish ministry. And they're not wrong, but they really like that. But notice he says, I am going back to Jerusalem. Macedonia and Achaia are pleased. Now, Macedonia and Achaia are what we would call northern Greece now. Okay, Corinth is southern Greece. Athens is southern Greece. Rome, of course, is not in Greece at all. It's in Italy. 1 Corinthians and Romans were written about the same time. Second Corinthians was written maybe a year later. So let's check in and see how well they're doing. Second Corinthians, not just two verses, two chapters that Paul has to take to address this. Chapters 8 and 9. We're not going to read the whole thing, but 2 Corinthians, he's checking in, among other things. Chapters 8 and 9, now we made known to you, brothers and sisters, the grace of God given to the churches of Macedonia, that during a severe ordeal of suffering, their abundant joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in the wealth of their generosity. For I testify that they gave according to their means and beyond their means. This is a great tithing passage right here, isn't it? They did so voluntarily, begging us with great earnestness for the blessing and fellowship of, look at that, helping the saints. We're poor, we've just gone through our own suffering, our poverty, but Paul taught them well enough that they wanted to help the saints. By the way, Macedonia, that would have been Philippi, Thessalonica, Berea, those churches. That's Macedonia. Okay. They did this not just as we had hoped, but they gave themselves first to the Lord and to us by the will of God. Thus we urged, hey, there's our friend Titus, that he should be involved in that, complete that act. I'm going to scroll down. You know, the grace of God. So, verse 10, here is my opinion on this matter. It is to your advantage, Corinthians, since you made a good start last year, both in your giving and your desire to give, to finish what you started. I look at this as an early faith promise. Okay, I'm not a big fan of faith. We've done faith promise in the past. I'm not a big fan of faith promise because we make a promise, but you may or may not actually follow through with it, right? That's one of the problems with the faith promise mission things. That's exactly what they did. They did their pledges, they did their promises, they started off well, but then life happened, and here we are not fulfilling the promises that we made. And Paul says, you know, you wanted to do it eagerly, and you should complete it according to your means. Okay? Verse 13, I do not say, there's a lot of logic in here, just a lot of plain, I do not say this so that there would be relief for others and suffering for you. I'm not trying to make you suffer, but as a matter of equality, at the present time, your abundance will meet their need. And, you know, one day their abundance may also meet your need, and there will be equality, you know? So that's okay. And then he quotes, the one who gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little. Jews were supposed to take, there was a welfare system, in a sense, within the Jewish system, within the Mosaic law that God set up. Nobody was supposed to go hungry. If you had too much, give it away. Okay, don't stash it, don't store it. I mean, you can have savings. Solomon talks about the wisdom of savings. It's not like you shouldn't have any savings. But within the Mosaic system, the poor, the needy, the widows, the orphans were all supposed to be taken care of from within the community. There was no other governmental system to take care of it. It was built into the civil government that God gave them, the law. And so Paul is saying, hey, you know what? The principle can still hold true that, you know, maybe one day they will be able to support you. He didn't guarantee it. He never promised it. He said that maybe one day they would be able to do it. So let's see. Titus is mentioned again, verse 19. In addition, this brother has also been chosen by the churches as our traveling companion as we administer this generous gift to the glory of the Lord. So Paul was really careful about not, and I didn't go there in 1 Corinthians 16, but he was very careful about not, especially with the Corinthians, not handling the money himself, because he's already being called a charlatan. He's already, you know, got people telling the Corinthians they can't trust him. So he's not going to do anything unnecessary that would cause suspicion for himself. I mean, just a lot of wisdom and administration in Paul's ministry. Verse 23, if there's any question about Titus, He's my partner and fellow worker among you. If there's any question about our brothers, they're messengers of the churches. They show them, you know, therefore show them openly before the churches your proof of love. Chapter 9, it's not necessary for me to write to you about this service to the saints or for the saints, because I know your eagerness to help. I keep boasting, to the Macedonians about this eagerness of yours, that Achaia has been ready to give since last year, and your zeal to participate has stirred them up. I keep telling the Corinthians are going to give so much to this. And the Macedonians are like, well, we can't let the Corinthians outgive us. So he's using this in there. But I'm sending these brothers so that our boasting about you may not be empty. Because if any of the Macedonians should come with me and find that you're not ready to give because you didn't put it aside at the first day of the week, like I told you to in chapter 16 of my other letter, we would be humiliated, not to mention you, by this confidence. Therefore, I thought it necessary to urge the brothers to go to you in advance, just to push you on a little bit. My point is this, verse 6, the person who sows sparingly will reap sparingly. The person who sows generously will also reap generously. And then here's the tithing verses. Here are the ones that keep coming up. Each of you should give just as he decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, because God loves a cheerful giver, and God is able to make all grace overflow to you, so that because you have enough of everything in every way at all times, you will overflow in every good work. So if you just plant your seed, if you faith promise, if you tithe, if you do all of this stuff, these verses are so abused. Just snatched right out of their context. Paul was talking about one specific thing, the collection for the poor saints in Jerusalem that he had promised Peter and James and John that he would not forget. And it all comes together. Isn't that amazing? Is that fun? It's amazing what you see when you read it in context. Let's see. Glorify God. Okay. So we'll keep. We'll park that there. And then, let's see here. What kind of time do we have? All right, let's finish up in Galatians with this one little piece in verses 11 through 14, and then we'll just be done for tonight. It's a good stopping point anyway. Because I know this is the one thing that people know about. If you know anything about Galatians, you know about this, and you think it's a much larger part, but it's really not. Paul yells at Peter. That's not the... I mean, the heading in my Bible here says Paul rebukes Peter. I like yells at better, but it's confronts Peter. Yeah, this I know, he just comes back to it's. But when Cephas came to Antioch, when did this happen? I have no idea when this happened. We don't have this account in Acts either. Luke really fell down on his job for being such a detailed guy. This guy. He really left out some important pieces. They weren't important to him. They weren't important to him. Well, obviously they were important to the Holy Spirit because they're in Galatians. we're going to get them in. So at some point, and again, this seems to be before the Jerusalem Council. Okay. So, and before, you know, when Galatians was written, if Galatians was written just before the Jerusalem Council, 48, 49, so this is all starting to come really, really, really soon here. Cephas came to Antioch. I opposed him to his face because he had clearly done wrong. Whoa, that's a headline. It's an attention grabber. You got to give me more information about that, Paul. What exactly happened? Well, here's what happened. Until certain people came from James. Now, Did James send them up to Antioch? Is it just they came from Jerusalem? Were they from the inner group? We're not sure exactly what he means by this. Okay, is James on their side still? Is he still undecided about this whole circumcision issue? There are questions surrounding this that Paul never answers. Okay, but until certain people came from James, he'd been eating with the Gentiles. So Peter is up in Antioch, Gentile territory. Has no qualms. He's having meals with people. He doesn't have his little kosher table over here and everybody else eats over here. He's eating and talking and fellowshipping. We're all believers. We're all the same. Okay, no problems. It always makes me think when I'm overseas, I'm traveling and we're all just there. Sometimes they want to set us apart. Very interesting. Sometimes the people, you are the teachers, you need to sit over here, but I want to have lunch with you. I want to have conversation, but how can we show that you're special? How about if we just not, and we just move on, right? So here's Peter just eating, rubbing elbows, shoulders, just having a great time ministering. There's Paul, there's Barnabas. Peter's known Barnabas for a long time. So checking out the ministry up here, what's going on? This is great. And then some other people from Jerusalem showed up. When they arrived, he stopped doing that. By the way, this is, I've got, always have to. I put in here, by the time we get to the Jerusalem Council, Peter was strongly and publicly on Paul's side. In fact, he's going to use almost the same argument at the Jerusalem Council that Paul yells at him here in Galatians 2. Almost the same argument, okay? Here's what I wanted to point out. Had been eating with the Gentiles. He had been doing this. This was not just a one-time thing. The tense of the verb shows that this was an ongoing thing. Okay, and so the fact that the net really brings this out, he had been doing this. This was just, it was the normal part. We don't know how long he was there until these others showed up, but to that point, nobody had any problems. Then they showed up. When they arrived, he stopped doing this and he separated himself because he was afraid of those who were pro-circumcision. What kind of influence do you have to carry in Jerusalem for Peter to feel the peer pressure, for the apostles to feel the peer pressure that they might be doing something wrong, they might be offending something, whatever. For Peter, the chief of the apostles, the lead apostle, for he himself to be so insecure, so afraid of this, that he would bow to the peer pressure. And not only that, keep going. You already did, right? The rest of the Jews who were working there in Antioch of Syria also joined with him in this hypocrisy, so that even Barnabas was led astray with them by their hypocrisy. It's the double use of the hypocrisy there. Even Barnabas, this is the guy who for all intents and purposes, he may have been one of the founders of this ministry here. He's been ministering in Syria for a long time. He went to go get Saul and bring him back to this thing. And Peter pulls away and the other Jews pull away, and even Barnabas can't stand the peer pressure at this point. And all of a sudden, we got an us and them going on up in Antioch. What do you think that makes the Gentiles feel like, the Christians up in Antioch? Second-class Christians? And his word, he used hypocrisy twice. Peter's been doing this fine for no problem, for how long? Barnabas has been, for years, possibly. These other Jews, we don't know how many were there, but all of a sudden, it's just like... Us and them. Probably just, that may be overstating it. Possibly just when the Gentiles were feeling that maybe we're on the same page. I mean, hey, we've got Peter here, and he has no problem. maybe, just maybe, Saul maybe is thinking, all right, I think we finally got a good thing going. And in a matter of a day, an hour, all of a sudden, like, everything that they'd been working so hard for was just shattered. So what did these Gentile believers think? What did Paul think? Paul got so ticked off, he stood up and looked at Peter in the face and said, "How dare you do this? What in the world are you thinking? When I saw that they were not behaving consistently," here's our phrase again, "with the truth of the gospel." He saw this not so much as a salvation issue, but as a gospel, as an evangelism issue. Right? He saw this as the truth of the gospel. "You are violating the very gospel by doing this, Peter, Barnabas, all of you guys. I said to Cephas in front of them all, 'If you, although you're a Jew, live like a Gentile and not a Jew, you've been doing this, how can you try to force the Gentiles to live like Jews?'" How can you do that? What argument can you make that they have to live like you when you've been living like them this whole time? In Acts 15, this is how Peter said it. Verse 7, "Peter stood up, said to them, 'Brothers, you know that some time ago God chose me to preach to the Gentiles so they would hear the message of the gospel and believe.'" That'd be Cornelius in Acts chapter 10. The first message to Gentiles was not Paul, it was Peter. "And God, who knows the heart, has testified to them by giving them the Spirit just as he did to us, and he made no distinction between them and us, cleansing their hearts by faith. So now why are you putting God to the test by placing on the neck of the disciples a yoke that neither our ancestors nor we have been able to bear? We can't live like this. How can you place this on them?" Sound familiar? Isn't that basically just what Paul said to him? "You've been living like this. How can you force them to live like you?" And Peter just twisted it around a little bit and said, "How can we force them to live like us when we haven't been able to do it? On the contrary, we believe that we are saved through the grace of the Lord Jesus in the same way as they are." And then they listened to Barnabas and Paul and explained what was going on out there. But Peter paved that way. And you think maybe he learned his lesson here in Galatians 2 as he's repeating almost the same argument that Paul made with him. And now he's not pulling back. He's not eating at a different table. Now he's standing there in Jerusalem in front of the elders and the apostles and the whole church saying, "What in the world are you guys doing? I'm not doing that. I'm on Paul's side. What do you guys think you're doing?" And he listened to Paul. And then there is a major transition in Galatians chapter 2 where Paul begins his argument now. Here's the history. The history's done. The background is done. Here's his message. Here's where he got it from. Here's why he knows he's right. He was willing to break with Jerusalem if they were wrong. The whole thing. He got Peter on his side. Now, what's his argument? What's his message? That's where we'll pick up next time, not next week because we've got the 70th, but next time we'll pick up in chapter 2, verse 15, because now he's going to move into his actual message that justification is by grace alone and through faith alone. And that's it. So, I don't know if I have any other slides. I don't remember. Truth of the gospel, hypocrisy, even Barnabas. Peter made the same argument. Yeah, and then we go into verses 15 and 16. So that's it. That brings us to the end of the first of three major sections of Galatians. So, questions, comments, smart aleck remarks? You haven't said anything yet tonight. You got any smart aleck remarks? Nope. They're not. Right. Yep. Yep. Moses and Aaron were from one particular clan within Levi. There were three clans. Moses and Aaron were from one. And God chose Aaron to be the high priest, and only those in that family could be priests. The other two clans had different roles in the tabernacle service and then later in the temple service. They could be musicians. They could set things up for the priests. They could take care. They were janitors, groundskeepers. They kept it was still temple service, but it wasn't sacrificial service. It wasn't burning the incense. It wasn't the actual priestly role, but they basically helped keep the temple running so that the priests could do their job. It was still in the family. Yep.
Even them. Yeah.
Yep. How big did that peer pressure, how heavy did that peer pressure, the influence that these people had have to be for the apostles?
On one of the slides before that, you said just how much influence they still was continuing.
Yeah.
Big,
14, 15 years later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being in Jerusalem at this point, being in the church in Jerusalem when the apostles are trying to keep things moving? And there's all this pressure that, no, it's an us. It's an us and them. If they're not willing to do this, then they can't be a part of our group. Yeah, well, you can go to 1 Corinthians. When we did 1 Corinthians, whenever we did 1 Corinthians a year ago or whenever it was, I don't remember, way back in chapter 1 of 1 Corinthians, there were the factions in the Corinth church too. I'm of Peter, I'm of Paul, I'm of Paulus, I'm of Jesus, you know. So, it happens everywhere, right?